You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.
Today on our show, I'm talking with Ichiro Irie. Ichiro, thanks so much for being with me today.
Thank you, Brainerd. Pleasure to be here.
Ichiro, I know you've done a number of things. Can you tell me what you're involved in now, your career? You've not just been an artist, but a curator. What's happening, or what's on your plate at the moment?
Well, as you may know, I've been working as an artist, and I organize art shows as a curator as well, and organize other events at the same time. But, for the past couple of years, I've been working on my own work, which has consisted a lot of these ink drawings of junkyards, and then also using materials, found materials like poster putty and broken sunglass lenses, and these mass-produced items to create wall pieces and sculptures. And also, the thing I'm working on currently is... Since February of this year in Mexico City, me and my colleague Laura Resendiz and I have been doing this artist-run art fair during the art fair week in Mexico City, and we plan to continue that in February 6th through the 9th of 2020 as well.
So interesting. So let's go through some of that in terms of your own work, because I want to talk about shows you're putting together and how that's happening and what's going on now. And really, maybe we should start with how you began curating. So in terms of that, you had your own practice. What was the first shows you curated, and how did you get involved in that?
Well, I feel like I've been organizing shows as long as I've been an artist. I went to undergrad right out of high school in film and communications, and then around the time I was 27 or 28, I went to graduate school. And while I was in graduate school, friends and I would organize exhibitions in artist-run spaces, and kind of taking things into our own hands to find venues to places to exhibit our work. So it was more of kind of a thing I just did among my colleagues and my classmates and things like that early in my career. And then I feel like out of grad school, my first, I think, professional show I would consider would have been around 2001. I went on a Fulbright fellowship to Mexico City, and a few months later I was invited to exhibit in Museo Carrillo Gil, which is one of the main museums in Mexico City. So I really think that both activities has gone hand in hand, and not one actually happened before the other necessarily.
So, and in terms of, you as you were saying, you were working with artist-run spaces, but you ended up also directing a curatorial space, isn't it? Which is called House, I believe, House Art?
Correct. Yeah, it's spelled JAUS, which is just a Spanish phonetic writing of the word house. And it was actually located and is located in the backyard of my house. It's a gallery in our backyard, basically. So that's why the name is called that.
It is indeed your house. So
correct.
So tell me a little bit more about that, because that's, a house is, of course, the space. You're exhibiting work not only outside but around it. Tell me how that works in terms of, is it a nonprofit artist space? Is it also your home? How is that established? Because
If you'll allow me to backtrack a little bit, while I was in Mexico City, I was actually living in the residency of a now-defunct artist-run space called La Panaderia, which was kind of a legendary space in Mexico City that the artists Yeshua Ocon and Miguel Calderon and Artemio put together. And during that time, the then-director, who's currently the director of Museo Eco, was Paula Santoscoy, and she and I were just having a conversation. Oh, wouldn't it be fun to put a newsletter together for the gallery? And then we were like, well, maybe it could just be its own thing instead of directly being associated with the artist-run space. And then she got a job at a big museum, so I was kind of left halfway through the project deciding, well, do I drop it or do I keep going? And then I said, well, what the heck, I'll just try it for a few issues, see what happens. And so I produced this magazine called Rim, with kind of the fantasy of it eventually kind of spreading to countries around the Pacific Ocean, as opposed to more northern Atlantic countries that were historically represented in art. So I started this, and it got some interest from some people who wanted to fund the magazine. So eventually, you know, we produced like 15 issues or something like that. And during my last year in Mexico City, which was 2005, I decided to do my own little artist-run space, and I decided to call it Rim House because it was also in my apartment as well. So we did 12 shows during my last year in Mexico City, and then I moved back to L.A. in 2007, and I was still organizing shows. I did a show at 18th Street Art Center, and then this gallery called Axis in Sacramento, and a couple shows in Tokyo, and one in Mexico City. And it was kind of everywhere, and no one really knew exactly where I was actually organizing my exhibitions. So I really wanted something more focused and centralized to invite curators to show and show my own work as well. So, I decided to open up the space and we built this actual structure that would be the space with the idea that eventually it might turn into my studio someday, but for the time being, it would function more as a gallery-type space.
And then, I don't want to interrupt you. I want you to keep going, but you said we, so there's you're doing this with... You're not doing this alone.
Well, you know, it's like I have my partner, Asuka Irie, who's also an artist. It hasn't been continuous, but principally the identity of the space is, I think, my own. But it's like I've worked with other people throughout the years intermittently to help me organize exhibitions and things like that. So, even though, you know, I'm the principal director of the gallery, I often just say we instead. But, so we started the gallery, and in September of 2009, and at first, you know, I kind of wanted to cast the widest net possible, maybe, and so we really dedicated to ourselves to organizing group exhibitions for the first 5 years, and I would invite different curators like KJ Baiza and Carl Berg, who's currently the director of Denk Gallery in downtown Los Angeles, and some curators from Paris and also from England and, you know, really all over the world to do these shows. And then after about the fifth year, decided I should do something a little bit more focused, and we've been focusing more on like one to three person shows ever after that.
And so to talk a little bit more about that, so it's thriving, it's working. It sounds like you built a community for that in LA. How is it funded? Do you get grants or support, private support? How does something like that continue? And it is in your home now. I'm sorry, this is your home in LA that you're also living in, right?
Yeah, fortunately, the costs are minimal, and, you know, I don't consider it at all a commercial gallery in the sense that we don't represent any specific artists or anything like that. So it's very much a project space. But, I always say it's like if I sell enough to, like, pay the electricity and the light bulbs, I'm happy. So it's functioned on that level, but it hasn't been you know, in terms of working, it doesn't work as a model for any kind of revenue or anything like that. But I teach also, and I'm also an artist, so it's I'm not really thinking of it, and I've never thought of it along those lines. However, you know, it's like it's opened up a lot of interesting opportunities to show abroad and to share other artists' works elsewhere as well. So so in that sense, I feel like it's been extremely successful or fortuitous. And among those is this project that I'm doing now with another curatorial collaborative that me and some colleagues founded called Kipo. And since earlier this year, during Art Fair Week, we did kind of an artist-run art fair called Kipo, and it was very minimal. It was only 13 projects for the time being, but we're going to continue it again in February of 2020, and it'll be around 20 projects next time, and hopefully maybe even larger in the continuing years.
So that's pretty exciting. Tell me a little bit about. I mean, it's grown, and that community sounds pretty remarkable. You've traveled around a little bit. I want to ask you about your own work, but in terms of the kind of community that you've built in LA as opposed to Mexico or other places, what do you think about what's going on there?
Well, you know, it's like Mexico for me is amazing. You know, you hear stories about like what New York might have been like in between the 30s and 60s, around when, you know, Pollock and, of course, Warhol, all the way through the minimalists and everything, and where it's like everybody kind of knew each other and talked to each other and everything. And I feel like Mexico City, at least when I lived there, definitely had that kind of vibe and energy where, you know, it felt in a weird way, even though there's superstars like Francis Salis and Gabriel Orozco, and then, you know, students and emerging artists like anywhere, it's like it feels in a strange way much more horizontal, where, you know, you can just run into anybody any day of the week and like strike a conversation, and, you know, so in one way it's like it's really easy to meet people and be a part of this larger community that I feel like it's a little bit more challenging in Los Angeles. So yeah, and Mexico City since then has like grown exponentially, because mainly probably because the fair started, so you have a lot more foreign artists living in Mexico City, and I think it's like more vibrant than ever currently as well.
And to talk a little bit about your own art, is your studio practice still strong in the midst of all of this that you're doing?
Well, let me tell you, it's like I feel like it was very strong when I was living in Mexico City in around before I came back in 2006, and then I was running my space, and I felt like Rip Van Winkle a little bit, where during the 5 years lapse, like so many things had happened in Los Angeles, and I was kind of out of touch with the LA scene. So I think it took several years for me to kind of build my career again in LA, and I think in a lot of ways, the most exciting years of my practice in Los Angeles has been in 2017 and 2018, where you know, I had my first like LA show in a commercial gallery in Los Angeles, whereas before they were all in either Japan or Mexico, and then also I was invited to participate in the Pacific Standard Time exhibition called Trans-Pacific Borderlands at the Japanese American National Museum, and it was curated by four or five curators, including a woman by the name of Chris Kuramitsu, who's the deputy director at the Mistake Room in LA, which is another amazing space in Los Angeles. So the past 2 years, like a lot of exciting things have been happening in terms of my own artistic practice.
So let's talk, just to ask you one more question about your own your own practice. We talked a little bit about it at the beginning, but what are you working on now? Is there a specific project, or maybe what were the last works that you worked on?
Well, my work is pretty expansive. When I lived in Mexico, I was predominantly a painter, and then when I moved back to LA, I think kind of the types of works that were and the type of processes that were talked about and thought about in Mexico finally kind of seeped into my system, and I started to make a lot more works using found objects and much more kind of sculptural in a way, and these accumulations of a lot of small objects. And among those, I think the works that I'm most known for right now is these poster putty pieces, where poster putty usually comes in three colors, and one is either blue, white, or orange, and I figured out that if I mix those colors, I could get a lot of earth tones and flesh tones and things like that. So
so let me ask you before you go on. Poster putty, you're talking about a kind of, like the kind of wheat paste they use to put up posters all over the street?
No, it's actually a much more like kind of a stationary item where it's kind of this putty. It kind of looks like a kneaded eraser, but you use it to put labels on walls and posters on walls. And
oh, right. You could put a poster on your wall without damaging your wall with this kind of like putty, essentially.
Yeah, correct. Yeah, and also
I see.
Sometimes
okay.
It's called earthquake putty, where you put a vase, you put it underneath a vase so the vase doesn't move around that much and everything.
Right.
It's a very like everyday kind of item, and I use it to make, they're not really paintings because I'm kind of molding them, but these two-dimensional images that reflect on like film and pop culture and photography and you know, that's been making its rounds a little bit. And also,
but tell me a little bit more, just to get into that, what exactly you're doing with that putty. I mean, and there'll be images of it in here, so I suppose, and people can go to your website and see them as well, but how do you use that putty to make these images?
They're works on panel, and I just mix those colors together. And I could get a very dark, it's not quite black, but a very dark gray color that kind of stands in for blacks. And then I could also make browns with it by mixing the orange and the blue. And I can also make the grays by mixing more blue than orange. And by mixing white with it, I could get a whole range of gradations and colors. So I mix them separately. And it's quite tricky because the colors change really dramatically. Right after you knead them, and then after they set in a little bit, because I think the air pockets make the colors lighter or something.
Right.
But anyways, doing this, I'm able to make these posters, basically. And the series is actually called the Imposter Series, and I spell it wrong with an E instead of an O, and kind of their appropriations of movie posters or photographic posters of gallery shows of people anywhere from Mapplethorpe to Diane Arbus or something like that, and they look fairly photographic from a distance, but when you look at them very close, they're really kind of grotesque because it's basically this putty that's like caked onto this flat surface.
Right, you see the surface of the putty. When you look close, you see the you're looking at the surface of this putty and the material itself, which is, you're saying, kind of anything but refined. It looks a little bit like mud or dirt up close.
Yeah, it's not so much dirt, but because I you have to lay down each separate value or hue separately. So each mark is kind of distinct. But because the material itself is so unruly and sticky, it just looks like a bunch of like little squiggly shapes that are caked onto this flat surface. And and then you'll sometimes see my fingerprints and nail marks and things like that when you look at it from a few inches away. And then you take a few steps back, and it looks much more photographic.
That's so interesting. And so in I want to ask you the last question about what you're reading, but is there anything else you want me to ask you about? Did I miss anything in terms of what's coming up at House? Do you want to mention, or anything about your own show? You can feel free to plug anything coming up in any way. There'll be links, of course, to your site on here, yeah, both to the House site and your website. But is there anything else you want to mention about upcoming?
So actually, our studio. This is my partner and I. We had our studio at 18th Street Arts Center in Santa Monica for since 2007. And we actually moved into House earlier this year. And so the physical space of the gallery is on hiatus right now, even though we're doing a lot of outside projects, the most recent being the Satellite Art Show in New York City. But yeah, it's like now I feel like instead of being so centralized, I'm like, as an organizer of exhibitions, I'm more interested in seeing what's out there and doing more outside projects. And so one of them, and probably the most ambitious, is this exhibition called Quipo Fair, which will happen from February 6th through the 9th in Mexico City, which will be a very exciting and opportunity for to really showcase artist-run initiatives all over the world. But I'm also doing another show at the Harris Gallery at the University of La Verne in La Verne, California, which is about half an hour east of downtown LA, and that'll feature it'll be called About Place, and that'll also feature six women artists from all over the world, and they generally make these very large scale sculptures and conceptual works. So really thinking about and they're all artists that are fairly mobile. Rene Lotinero lives between L.A. And Lisbon in Portugal, and then Kyoko Taniyama lives all over the world, was born in Malaysia, I think, but currently lives in different places in Germany, and goes back and forth between Japan and Germany. And then Kala Aguiniga is another artist that's being featured, and her work, you know, deals with a lot of border issues, and you know, she was originally from Tijuana, but now works mainly in L.A. So, you know, all six artists, I feel, have kind of this fluidity in terms of their physical locations as people and citizens of the world, but also their work specifically deals with this idea of place and, you know, issues of migration or issues of geography or issues of home and things like that. So it's a fairly loose conceptual string that, like, ties all the artists together, but I think it'll be a very exciting and again, an ambitious show because of the nature of their work.
That is exciting. Well, I wish you luck on that and success. And I want to ask you, what are you reading at the moment?
Not so much reading, but I'm while I'm doing all of this, I'm also taking some classes in entertainment design. And one of the classes I'm taking right now is called Prop and Vehicle Design at the local college. And it's I want to incorporate some of those ideas because a lot of my work does deal with the automobile into my work, and it's the first time I've ever used like a tablet before. It's like I'm pretty old-fashioned and haven't been exposed to a lot of technological stuff as far as my own artwork is concerned. So it's kind of taken over my life. So I'm doing a lot of research and reading about the use of this technology, but also other artists who've made a lot of amazing works in a totally different field than my own, making props and vehicles and characters for the entertainment industry, especially for animation and video games and things like that. So that's, I think, where my half of my mind is at right now.
That sounds interesting. Ichiro, I want to thank you so much for talking with me today. It's really been a pleasure.
Thank you, Brandon. Thank you for having me.
You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.